welcome to episode 65 of This Week in Asia. In the virtual studio today, we've got a really full house. I'm Shulin, and with me is Bernard. Bernard, how are you doing today?
I'm fine. Hello, everybody.
And over in Kuala Lumpur, we've got Daniel.
Yo, hi.
Hey, what happened? Are you? Sounds like I've already been here.
Sorry, was talking to one of our colleagues, John, actually. He's been busy with some stuff. Hopefully to get him on the show soon, actually.
Hopefully we'll hear from him soon. And finally, we have the party man himself, Smithy. He's running around a lot these couple
in
of
his
days.
Dream house, right?
We had a busy schedule. And then we have one more special guest tonight. Let me introduce him. I think we're all pretty excited to have Craig White on. Craig White, MIH. Hello, Craig.
Hi, Craig. Nice to meet
you. Thanks very much. Hi, everyone.
Welcome to This Week in Asia.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's great to be chatting to you guys. I like what you do as often as you can do it.
We're starting to make it happen. So, Craig, I think if we were at like a Yahoo get-together last night and we were talking that if I said, hey, this is Craig from MIH, most people didn't know who you were or what the company is until I kind of explained it. So I think we'd like to have you do that because I think a lot of our listeners are going to be wondering at first who you are and what you're connected with. And when we connect the dots, I think everybody will be amazed at your guys' presence in the region.
Okay, thanks a lot. Look, guys, I hope not to make this a monologue, so if I take too long or I bump along, please just jump in and get the conversation going as and when you wish. So I'm based in Singapore. I have been for less than a year. Prior to that, I lived in Thailand for about 11 years. The company I work for, MIH, has recently been getting more press under our mothership name, which is NASPAS. NASPAS is a South African-based, and I'm a South African by birth. In the South African-based, we could call us a traditional media company who has made transitions more than once. So from our historical roots in newspapers, we transformed into books and magazines. We transformed into television. And at one point in our history, had TV businesses in Thailand, Greece, parts of Western Europe, including France, and throughout Africa. That has all been trimmed back as we've been transforming ourselves over the last 15 years into an internet business. So our first internet plays, obviously, were in South Africa in 96 in a traditional AOL-type model running an ISP with closed gardens and all the rest of it.
That's originally in South Africa. Is that where that started?
Yeah, that's where that started. Steve Case was our role model for where the internet was going, and so we jumped in as beginners. That we've seen take out a lot of independent ISPs, and is actually doing pretty well right now.
Are you guys one of the biggest ISPs in South Africa then at this point?
Yeah, we're the biggest independent ISP. Our competition is the incumbent telco.
Got it.
But we even there, we caused a bit of a revolution by introducing, which is pretty common in Asia, but isn't it all common in Africa, is uncapped broadband, where you just pay a subscription fee and eat as much bandwidth as you want. Previously, they had it a bit like the mobile companies have their data services here, where you have caps on how much data you could use, and they just charge you more and more.
So, Craig, just curious, because I've been to South Africa before. Are you from Johannesburg or Cape Town?
I lived in various places, but the last kind of 15 years before I moved to Thailand, I was based in Cape Town. That's where studied and lived, yeah.
Yeah, the Table Mountain view was fantastic, and also the Cape of Good Hope, where you can see the southern tip of the continent.
Yeah, Cape Town I was lucky enough to return during the World Cup and actually went to see a game in Cape Town. So, you know, that is really something quite special.
Yeah, so I just follow up from the discussion, your introduction of your background. I just wanted to know a little bit more, like, what you guys do. I understand that you also do investments in Asia as well, right? Mm. So how did MIH come into Asia? Yeah.
Okay. Our initial you know, we had teams. We established a team in Hong Kong looking to make investments in East Asia. That team landed in 96. And there they were looking really around television and internet. Our first real business we got going was when we invested and created with our partners TrueCorp in Thailand, UBC TV, which happened about 98. And then we started making investments in the internet space in 99, where we bought a portal in Thailand called Sinuk.com, which we still own, and I take great pleasure from that. I did the deal, and I actually ran the business for a number of years, and it was really, really wonderful and a great experience doing that. At about the same time, we started looking quite hard at China. We made a lot of mistakes, as did a lot of foreign investors, by throwing thousands of expats into businesses, by not trusting the market knowledge from people who had lived in the market their whole lives. Those were bitter lessons that we learned, and they were expensive lessons. Shortly after the bubble burst, we managed to find what has turned out to be one of the great investments, probably alongside Sequoia's investment into Google in China, where we were lucky enough to buy 50% of a company called Tencent, which is based in Shenzhen, in early 2001, I think. And obviously, you know, everyone in China knows the company, and most of us who work in the industry in Asia, and more recently with Tencent's investment into DST in Russia, they've been getting more global notice as well.
Now, I was, Craig, like, I always find what's funny is, like, that's probably one of the largest deals of our generation, right?
Yeah.
It's sort of like you're here to tell us the untold story, because everybody knows about Tencent and how big they have been, but no one knows who really invested in it.
Well, actually, most of our audience actually been hearing us talking about Tencent since day one of This Week in Asia.
Yeah, but nobody knows the backers, like, you know. So you guys are something like the Sequoia for Asia in that sense, right?
Well, we're not venture caps, you know, and our objectives are very different from the private equity or VC firms. We're very much strategic, and we like to get very involved with the businesses. So, you know, between the period, I guess, 2002 and 2005, which is a year after their listing, my boss, who runs the internet business for NASPAS globally, visited the Tencent team probably twice a month. Not because he could add any value directly in terms of how they build their business, but because it was another head around the table who was interested and passionate about what they were doing. And, you know, we try and get, very involved. And we also don't enter into businesses with any form of defined exit. So our requirements, when we talk to entrepreneurs about investing in them, we come from a very different angle from VCs. And our whole process for making an investment can be quite torturous from an entrepreneur's perspective. Our due diligences are much more extensive. You know, we really get into it. And we buy into businesses that we're really passionate about, and we make a decision to buy a business with an investment committee, and, you know, we talk with them. And literally, it needs to be a unanimous decision. Otherwise, you know, that's the way we run it. So, you're making parallels now.
Craig, I'm very curious, because I want to know a little bit more. How did you guys eventually decide to invest in Tencent?
That was in the earlier days. We sat in a big room in Bangkok, and we voted by a show of hands. That's how we decided. They did a lot of work around it. So the deal team who had worked with the founders of Tencent in building up where they saw the business going, which is not where it's gone to today. It's exceeded all expectations. And, you know, they presented their case coherently, and, you know, at that point, you know, the people in the room has already seen, I mean, it was early days, right? We'd see in those days, ICQ was a big IM player. And I am was like a great, different from a Web 1.0 kind of game. And already Tencent was leading the IM space. So it wasn't such a difficult play in 2001 because you knew that if you were leading IM in China, where the government had rolled out significant fiber through the country in the previous decade, you know, you were going to get something good out of it. You had locked in into a communications paradigm, which, you know, we can thank Steve Case for that model, you know, right back with its old AOL, its 6C model, you know. Yeah. You talked about community and communications, and, you know, Web 2.0, we hear the same stuff again, and I'm going like, we might have Ajax and something quite cool, but some of the messages we've heard for a long, long time now.
That's pretty cool. So eventually, of course, Tencent has evolved to a pretty like the Web 2.0 elements of social networking. It's running very big revenues today. I mean, that Facebook is trying to copy their stuff.
Yeah, their revenue model has taken them a long way into getting publicity outside of Asia. You know, they really were the forerunners, bar, I guess you could say, some of the mobile guys in Japan, DNA and Green, managing to capture small amounts of revenue from lots of people for virtual items. Obviously now with the Zingers and that, you know, the rest of the world is trying to catch up. That got them some early notice in the valley.
When you look at that marketplace and what they're doing, like a lot of times we talk on the show, Craig, about what's happening in China with companies like yourself, say, investing in China for Tencent, which is largely a China business. We always kind of talk about, when will you start to see things in China other than the capital start to move outside of and affect the other parts of the region? I know Tencent themselves is now using their money to invest in other things around the region, but do you see a time that where like the Chinese sites start to move outside of China, or do you think it's going to keep looking like it does today?
Well, you know, Smitty, put yourself as running a business in China. Okay, now you've got a market that's 20% of the world's population. Potential, okay, the East Coast is a lot richer than inland, but it's, you know, the inland areas are getting wired, they're coming online, and you've got, I mean, just look at, let's take this group buying for, how many Groupon clones have triggered in China in the last 6 months, a couple of hundred maybe.
Yeah.
So now if you're running an internet business, your local competition is so tough and so hungry that I think you need to have a real scale in terms of thinking before you flex outside of China. I mean, even if you consider the Japanese companies, which have been around for really, you know, it's a very sophisticated market. And the Chinese internet businesses, bar Rakuten, have not really stepped outside of Japan. I mean, the Japanese company. Right. And even with Rakuten, it's relatively new. So, you know, the Chinese companies, will they step out? They need to be brave. They need to be very solid in where they're sitting before they step out, because it's such a big market. It depends how much you want.
So what do you consider as something really comfortable in China? I mean, the internet in China is still in infancy, and there is still a lot of potential. What do you think Tencent's direction will come in the next 5 years?
I think Tencent will look to expand outside of China, probably in the form of various partnerships. I don't know, and I'm talking just off the cuff. I don't have insight into what they're thinking about. But I think they will remain very focused on what is happening inside China. And if the pressures get too much, they will pull back from international efforts to make sure that they retain their leadership position in China.
Meaning that that's more important than expanding outside of China.
I think it must be. China's now the second biggest economy in the world, taken over from Japan. You know, all the bankers are saying in another 20 years it's going to be the biggest economy in the world. You know, you want to be the biggest business in the biggest economy. I mean, how much is Google's money, which is the biggest internet business in the world, comes from outside the U.S.? I mean, most of it is still U.S.-based.
Yep.
Exactly.
Or even if I take an Apple, which is now the biggest tech company in the world, I mean, You know, a few of us folk with money are running iPhones outside of the US, but it's 80 million iPhones in the US that are making them the most valuable technology company in the world.
Yeah, it's amazing. So when you look, if you take off the China side of the house and you know, say for all intents and purposes, the money you guys have been able to make in that deal kind of funds you to, you know, do amazing things in the rest of the region. How would you prioritize the rest of the region? Like when you're sitting down, you know, maybe from MIH perspective, not just your patch, where do you see the next opportunities and how are you ranking that?
Well, we in the region now, and I include India, we have businesses in India, Thailand, Malaysia, Singapore, and the Philippines. Obviously, we'd like to scale all of those organically and through acquisition if possible. And then the real market to hit, and it's very popular at the moment, so it's quite difficult, is Indonesia. I guess 2 years ago, Vietnam was a sweet spot, and Tencent have an investment in Vietnam. I guess you guys know that. So that's probably the second market of interest in the region. So where we haven't gone into yet, Indonesia, then Vietnam.
Got it. You guys are invested in it, but Vina Capital, Vina Games in Vietnam?
Vina Game, yeah. Tencent invested in Vina Game. Yeah, that's correct. That's correct.
Got it. And do you see as I think part of like a couple of years, everybody thought Vietnam would be the place, but then now sometimes it feels like with the way they block some things and the way they kind of have some protectionist mode that although it's an interesting place, wouldn't just the sheer size of Indonesia eventually lead you to believe that that's got more opportunity than Vietnam?
Yeah, I mean, Indonesia, you know, it's the fourth most populous country in the world.
Yeah, correct.
Most populous Muslim country in the world, so.
Yeah, it's the biggest Muslim country in the world. It's the fourth most populous country in the world. Their GDP growth is fantastic. They're cleaning out historically there was always these threats of corruption which scared people away. They're cleaning that out. So it's looking very, very attractive. The problem with markets when they start looking attractive is there are lots of people in there shopping. And it can make things expensive. And our challenge with that is that we don't just play in Indonesia, for example. So let's say I found a great opportunity in Indonesia and I pitch it at our investment committee. Their challenge is they have a bucket of cash to spend globally. So if it's too expensive in Indonesia for the growth of that company versus, let's say, Argentina, then I will lose out and the deal will go to a deal in Argentina. You know, there's lots of activity around the world. You know, I have peers in Africa, Europe, Latin America, so all developing markets. In Europe, we focus Eastern Europe, Russia. Chasing deals, we've got business development teams in all these areas. And so, you know, you fight for the dollar for your investments internally. One of my friends in the company, actually on plan, he was working on a deal. He said, Craig, it's really tough in this company because when you pitch for an acquisition, you have to believe in the business more than if it's your own business. That's the passion that's expected from it. And I said to him, yeah, well, welcome to reality. And that's how we run it. That's literally how we run it. So if Indonesia is too expensive, no matter how much I love a business, I just won't actually get it through because of other opportunities that we see elsewhere in the world.
Yep.
So, Craig, we've been talking a lot about China, and you've just shared with us a little bit about what you find interesting about Indonesia. What else do you find interesting in Southeast Asia? I mean, Indonesia's been getting a lot of attention. I mean, no small thanks to Kopro, and they well deserve it, but Southeast Asia is a big place. What else has caught your interest here?
Well, the countries where we've already made investments, so in the Philippines, there was a classified business called Sulit that we invested in last year. So the Philippines is of interest very much. It's a very friendly place to do business. The people are very friendly, and there's a nice kind of street culture. So that was an easy one. You know, like Vietnam, 90-odd million people have clustered, a lot of businesses clustered around Manila, it's beginning to expand now. But that is very sweet. And if we can find more initiatives there, that's very interesting. They also have a good software development culture. They've got a good customer service culture. I'm talking about industries that have been built, which are useful to put together when you're creating a business. So Philippines is interesting. Malaysia, it's right next door. We invested into an auction business also last year called Lelong. That's correct.
Yeah, Lelong is the biggest and probably only auction site in Malaysia. And the weird thing is they have not actually expanded elsewhere. That's the weird one.
Yeah. The CEO has spoken about expanding to Vietnam, but we're kind of toying with it. Richard Tan, the founder. So I'm actually visiting him next week. So that Ocean Tulip has caught our fancy. And then, like I said, you know, Thailand, where we have Sinuk, and we've had it for a long time. And then Singapore, where probably 2 years ago now, we invested in a mobile ad network business called Buzz City that is founded by Dr. K.F. Lai. So, you know, all of the territories are, you know, those, the kind of PIMS plus Thailand and Vietnam, all of them are kind of sweet spots. Cambodia, Laos, Myanmar, still too early stage for us. I think if you can stimulate, some of the bar camps have been very successful, if you can stimulate more of an angel culture into those markets, just to test what the entrepreneurial spirit is like, then there might be something interesting coming up in a year or 2 years for a group like ours.
Yeah, so Craig, typically, like, I always have a hard time figuring out what to call you guys. Like, you don't really go in early, right? You're not a startup investor. You're not really a VC either. So you guys just strategically continuing to build a portfolio, and then what you want is just a portfolio and like a shoehorn into all the markets that you want to be in, no matter what stage the company's in, but you want a piece of a particular action. I mean, how are you guys deciding where you're going to go?
There are a few factors that trigger it. Obviously, there's an assumption about the market. Then we look very closely at the management team and their strengths, history, and their vision, passion for what they're doing. We understand businesses can change, so we look how obsessed they are with the opportunity rather than how obsessed they are with their own business and what they're doing currently. And then we look at, I suppose, the scale that they've reached within their market. You know, we have done startups in a number of places. So in 2006, the business Ibibo in India, which we run, we actually started from nothing. It was completely greenfield. And we bought a couple of very small two-man businesses into them after 6 months or so just to start bulking up. But more recently, we felt that and there was an article in Wired magazine relatively recently that alludes to it as well, that, you know, market share is important and early mover advantage is important. So we do look at companies which have significant traction in the space that they're operating in as a key measure.
Got it.
Yeah. And in terms of us building our portfolio, yeah, you know, that's the game is to have, you know, great businesses run by great entrepreneurs in exciting parts of the world.
And you guys don't typically sell your stuff, right? I mean, you some of it you've made money because someone went public and you, like, in 10 cents, you sold some of your shares, right? But generally, yeah. you're not doing much horse trading of any of your businesses, right?
No, we don't. Where we tend to sell businesses is if an entrepreneur's strategy departs wildly from ours, and that can happen after 2 or 3 years in a business. So, you know, they might see there's a core B2B kind of operation they want, and at that point in time, we might not be thinking B2B is attractive. And then we'll sell. But typically, we don't go in and try and, you know, grow a bit and, you know, make a bit of profit out of it. That's not our model, correct, man?
Right. So let's take a short break, and then when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about Craig and his plan for the future, and see if he'll gaze into a crystal ball for us.
I'm Nicholas Aaron Koo from the Singapore Cybersports and Online Gaming Association, and you're listening to This Week in Asia.
Hi, welcome back to This Week in Asia. We have Craig White from MIH, and also joining, also together with our regular host, Chu Lin, Dr. Bernard, and Michael. So, Michael, you want to...
Yeah, so we've had Craig White on, and we've been talking a lot about the region and the space. And, you know, Craig, if you look at, you know, your guys' opportunities and what you're doing, do you know, a lot of times I look at the internet space as just continually being dominated by the big players, and not even speaking as Yahoo, but, like, if you look at Facebook now adding places, you know, and kind of taking out some people think is a whole layer, where do you see... the opportunities, like when you not look at a region, but if you look at a space or an opportunity, is it mobile for you? Is it e-commerce? I mean, do you see things that are still incredibly attractive to you, even no matter where the region is?
Yeah, we've invested quite heavily over the last 2 years in e-commerce. And while it's less prone to spikes in terms of value or hype, on our Facebook, it does seem to, with the right skill set and focus, generate good sustainable businesses. So, you know, wherever I look, and, you know, I spoke to Sulit and Alan, they're both e-commerce businesses. So, you know, e-commerce type businesses I see as very attractive, relatively easy to understand their business models. We have great skills in the group for valuing the businesses. So that's an area really to look at. Mobile, you know, I've always loved that it's just so difficult. It's, you know, from, I guess, when the mobile VAS stuff started at the early 2000s and operators are taking lots of money and we all look to Japan for motivation, where Docomo only took a small amount of money. That model actually hasn't trickled through that success to the rest of the world. But, you know, the rate of growth of mobile phones and the fact that it should be or will be the primary point of internet access for the bulk of internet users globally is exciting. But it's really I don't see anyone has cracked it yet. So that's an area which interests me personally immensely. And we see lots of people showing potential but not yet having cracked it. You know, we have a couple of mobile internet assets which are, you know, showing great promise. As yet, they're not, you know, Google size. So we have one in South Africa called Mixit, which is a mobile messaging product which literally revolutionized mobile data services in South Africa. And it does really good business in South Africa, but leveraging it out is difficult. And then in Europe, we have a business called Mimbuzz, which is a kind of mobile VoIP service, which, you know, is adding lots of users. They have a great iPhone app. They have a great BlackBerry app. They run on Nokia phones. And they're going to get there, but again, it's just potential. It's really exciting, but still potential. So for me, those are the two sweet spots. Gaming is a third area that's of interest. At the moment, it's a little bit in transition. You know, we've got the traditional MMOG folk really versus the more casual slash social gaming folk. And, you know, I think it's going to play out into two sectors. I think you are going to get the more casual gamers, the gamers who play on Facebook and other social networks. On social games, which are kind of turn by turn, they don't require the effort or the effort is the best word to play. And then I think you will get the hardcore, for want of a better term, gamers still running MMOGs. As yet, unsure how those will transition to mobile. So those are kind of the three, four areas that I'm chief of.
Got it. And you see, in the whole e-commerce space, which is very, like, you know, different in every part of the world, do you ever see that uniting region-wise to where there's going to be e-commerce plays across a region? You look like Japan has their own, China has their own, and, you know, do you see that changing, or is it the payment models just don't make sense yet to create regional plays?
Yeah, it's interesting. One of my friends in KL was chatting with me about that, and his perception is that even in Southeast Asia, he doesn't see that we have a great regional e-commerce play, but he sees the potential for a great e-commerce payments play. Mm. So that's his perspective. You know, shopping and the shopping experience tends to be quite local. I think there are models that can be applied in multiple places with various degrees of success. And I've spoken about it earlier. You know, Rakuten's kind of B2C model, which has, you know, been great for them in Japan. They monetize it very heavily, but the storefronts, localizing that into regions and countries, might be a good play. That's probably the easiest one. A straight C2C type marketplace. eBay's had some success in the region, mainly cross-border as opposed to in-country. But, you know, where they got hammered, really, and the best example, I suppose, you can look at it is in China. Because of the eBay model, they don't allow buyers and sellers to communicate directly because they want to take money off a transaction fee, basically a final closing fee. They take a cut. Whereas Taobao allowed buyers and sellers to communicate, and that is what is far more comfortable for people buying from other people in China. So, you know, it's those kinds of tricks. So if you do have a broad platform, it requires significant flexibility. And again, it goes back to our model of, you know, buy into entrepreneurs who understand their market. We might have technology sitting in Russia or Poland or Brazil that we can hand over to folk here if it fits. But the entrepreneur, let's say in Indonesia, needs to say, you know, this is the kind of stuff that you're looking for. Does MIH have it for me? Then we can work. Otherwise, we'll work with them to build it. So I think you need to be very flexible in terms of different models like Rakuten, except there might be an edge there for a regional e-commerce play.
And you, when you talk about the mobile ecosystem, I'm curious, like, when you look at the ecosystem of the handset players and RIM and Nokia, and then now you got Android and Apple, you know, in your crystal ball, like, where do you think this is all going? Is Android just going to, like, tear it all apart, or do you think guys like RIM and Nokia might come back into action, or is it game over?
I think we need to look to the guys making handsets in China, NTK, those kind of handsets that are coming out of China. Yeah, I think those are guys. You know, it's not a BlackBerry. It's more a BlackBerry-like function phone, but it's what people are looking for. It has instant messaging, has mail, looks like a BlackBerry, costs you $40, no contract required. You know, in very difficult to compete against. I've been quite a fan of Android because of their model of saying, you know, look at the web, and we're going to give you the operating system, and, you know, everyone's going to use Google to search for everything. But it seems like people are getting lazier and lazier. They don't want to search. They just want apps to do everything for them. So,
yeah, you know, if you look at, like, the, the guys in China have substituted Baidu for Google, so Google doesn't even have the search player, right?
yeah. So it makes it very difficult for Android. Although I do like,
But sorry, Craig, just to follow up on that question. So, I mean, most of the sort of new companies in China now is really banging all their investments on Android and building apps for Android. But you'll be tuned towards the Chinese search engines where Google will have no part to play. How do you see Android's adoption in China? And how do you think that Android will be pretty big in China, but with no Google participation on it?
I think Google will probably still find a way of participating on it. The problem is it depends on the price point of the handsets that they're getting out and whether those handsets really work on with Android really well. Because the handsets that are really running away in China, as I said, like your $40 handset. And, you know, even your HTC with Android on a more expensive. So, you know, I'm not sure if the developers in China building for Android and probably also building for the iPhone aren't saying, hang on, there's a really rich market that's prepared to pay lots of money sitting in the US and Western Europe. So if that's where Apple and Android are going to run hard, let's build apps for those markets. Not so much just for a local market. You know, there's a fair way of thinking about that, you know. So that's what the developers might be thinking as opposed to just the Chinese market.
All righty. Well, Craig, I think we're going to wrap up. Thank you so much for coming online. I think this is going to be one of our fun episodes. It's always great to hear somebody in the trenches and talking about the stories and the things that you don't normally hear on the normal VC startup side of the house. I think you guys are somewhere in the middle, and you know, I was excited to know you're going to come on because a lot of people don't know how this whole ecosystem works out here, and you guys have had a whole different model, right? But it's obviously been very successful at it.
We've been lucky.
Yeah, it's been great. And then, I think usually we wrap up and we tell people where to find people. I don't know if you actually want to be found. if people are looking, do you use Twitter, Craig, or are you not Twitter?
Yeah, I use Twitter. I'll have to actually spell it out. MCWNEKS.
MCWNEKS.
Yeah, MCWNEK. MCW Next. On Twitter.
Alrighty. Awesome. And
you can get me at Reach Craig on Nimbuzz as well.
On Nimbuzz. Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. And I think with that, I think we'll probably wrap up, Daniel, unless you think you want to do news. But Craig, this is awesome.
Yeah, that is an awesome, awesome episode. We just go through the news a bit. Craig, you want to disconnect now?
No, listen in. It's great.
Okay, sure.
All right. Okay, so cool. We'll roll through some news. I might have to drop off, Daniel, but I'll let you guys keep rolling.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. And thanks, Craig. This is great.
What is the news?
Thanks, Vinny. Bye.
Where do we go now? Japan, China, Hong Kong, what?
Sorry?
This is like the month where everything keeps getting bought, huh?
Yes.
First it was. Yeah, now it's Japan. Yahoo Japan buying stuff and Groupon buying stuff.
So you want to go with the Groupon news? Let's go.
Okay, let's go with two items and then we close up. And then maybe we can do the rest next week.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have Groupon actually buying a company in Russia and Japan. And I'm looking for, where is my window?
Where's the link?
Sorry. Okay, so Groupon bought Qpod, which is actually, according to Serkan, is a startup that has just been founded in Japan.
They started 5 months, I think.
Yeah, in June.
5 months, actually. Yeah.
Is that a record for the quickest acquisition?
No. They got beaten by Europe's CityDeals.com, which is in Germany, German's Groupon clone, which was actually only done in 4 to 5 months, and then they got acquired by Groupon.
Wow.
Actually, that's not the fastest. Yeah. The fastest is that a company that YouTube bought was a Y Combinator graduate, and that company got bought before it was launched.
What is this? The trend for in vitro acquisitions, are we seeing acquisitions happening sooner and sooner in the process? I think we talked about this before, right? Because if you buy it young, it's cheaper.
And the super angels paying more money than the VCs these days because of that.
Well, if you buy it young and you can go in early, it's good. However, also we want to look at what is Groupon's intention of buying Qpot and Drobbly. In Sesshily, are they looking at technology or are they looking at the amount of people that they are serving?
I think it's more of the market share and deals that the clone is getting, because I think technology-wise, Groupon is already pretty ahead of most of the Groupon clone players. I think the question for them is to try to get market share, so they need to have a local player that is known and basically push those clones to help them to get more business, basically. Yeah. I mean, if you heard recently the the founder of Groupon, Mason, I think. It was Andrew Mason, yes. He made this comment. They were trying to probe him and said that it's Groupon making $1 million per day in the U.S. And then he was smiling and say, well, you know, it's a good business. So I think the key now is to try to secure early positions in different countries, and I think that's where they're heading. I probably, since I don't know whether should they're going to be more group. I mean, China has 190 Groupon clones. I'm just really wondering, who is Groupon going to acquire in China?
Craig, do you want to add in to this?
Well, I'd hate to guess who Groupon is even getting close to looking at in China.
Well, there is which other news? Do you want to go with the iLunarscape?
I think we want to congratulate our friends at MyGango as well.
Yeah, interviewed a company, MyGango.
Okay.
They just raised $585,000 from 10 angels, but a few of them are very famous, okay? So one of them is Dave McClure.
Mm-hmm.
I think Joshua Schachter, who was the founder of Delicious, was also on it. And let me see. Who's one more guy that the name just went off me. Yeah.
But we want to congratulate them. We interviewed them some time ago. For those of you who have not encountered MyGango, they're basically a human translation machine, if you will.
And they built an API that allows developers to pull their translation engine onto their website.
So very, very impressive.
Yep.
Well done. We're going to wait a bit for more good news from MyGango, I think.
Yeah, we should be getting them on the show again.
Yes.
Yeah.
Send us a case of Yebisu.
Yep.
All right.
What other big news happening this week?
Essentially, 10Cube just became an Intel company, if you want to add that.
Oh, yeah.
So McAfee was bought over by Intel, and McAfee recently purchased 10Cube, and Darius had their party yesterday, right? Did you go?
Yeah, we were at the party yesterday. I think Smitty and I were drinking there and having a good chit-chat and whatever.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, and Smitty was in a blazer.
Yes.
Almost couldn't recognize him.
Yeah, that was rare, actually.
I want to talk about iLunarscape, the article that Serkan wrote.
Okay, yeah.
Basically, it's triple engine web browser for the iPad, and essentially is designed to actually run on tabs at the bottom where your hands are instead of right on top like Safari and stuff like that. Have you seen the pictures?
I saw some of the screenshots. I think they're moving towards something like the Minority Report type of browser.
Yep.
Where you can touch onto any part of the screen and actually do that. I mean, I would fancy the Japanese would be the first to invent this, because they kind of very good with design interfaces and etc. It's pretty exciting. There is actually a company that does something similar but for shopping. It's called ShopKick in US.
Uh-huh.
They're trying to Reid Hoffman invested in that company, and apparently the initial business plan was they wanted to do what, you know, in Minority Report, where you walk in and then they just show you everything that you have shopped before and what you want to buy there.
Yeah.
Try to do something like augmented reality version of that.
I mean, it's not far from happening. I mean, every time you buy something from Amazon, they come up and say, oh, based on what you bought before, we think you like, you know, C, D, and E.
Yeah, which is e-commerce engines are becoming more and more, I guess, authentic in the sense that people are actually, the platforms are able to tell what you are buying.
Yeah, Craig, yeah. That is what your company is looking at in terms of e-commerce. Ultimately, it's still king in terms of what online is, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of guaranteed. You know, if you get your e-commerce business right, you're not looking for a revenue model. It comes built in.
Are you looking at anything that we shall actually merge together, online e-commerce together with offline commerce?
No, we tend to go for pure, I mean, like clicks and bricks. You know, it's a tough one because if you look at Tetris in China, that's their model. And the big recruiting businesses, online recruiting businesses in India, and even e-commerce, that's their model as well. So it's quite difficult. Sometimes you need to look at it in the market, although it can lead you with the challenge of managing a much bigger country than you otherwise would have.
Okay, so let's end with some events and then we'll wrap up the show. There is Amazon Web Services launched their Startup Challenge. Well, Malaysia is not one of it.
It's only Singapore, Indonesia. Yeah. No, it wasn't.
Yeah, I know. There's a limited amount of countries, and essentially the developers in Malaysia are pretty disappointed. All I can say is that. Well, it's for.
They can always ask them to move down to Singapore.
Yes, Bernard, you're always asking developers to move down. Well, all I can say is Asia is actually India, Japan, Singapore, if you want to include Australia and New Zealand, South Korea, those are the countries that you're looking at. So for more information, we will post a link on that. And also, is there any events that you guys are heading next week?
There are no events heading next week.
Yeah, but the week after is your Barcamp JB.
Yeah.
No, it's next week, right?
Yeah, it's next week, Barcamp.
28-29 Barcamp JB. There is the CEO of YTL Communication is also having a roundtable in KL to meet up with developers on the. Let me pull up the date. So they're meeting on the 26th of August in Lot 10.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah, he's buying drinks. So if you are developers. That is doing anything
in Malaysia
that is doing anything or you're interested in getting into the mobile space, go and talk to Wing. Wing is formerly from Clearwire. He was actually headhunted to run Clearwire, which is the 4G provider over in US. He was headhunted to run YTL Communication. And do look out for details at our site. So
yep.
Is that, I think that's about all.
Well, of course, we have the big events coming up, the Social Networking Forum Asia,
and also
E27 Accelerate with Singtel and Nifony Labs.
Yeah.
Anyway, you're going to be voting for the top 50 apps. They're all happening on the same 2 days, 22nd, 23rd.
September.
Yeah, I want to know, which are the apps that you guys are interested at this point in time?
I guess there's so many apps. I haven't looked at it.
I haven't looked at it.
The usual suspects are all on, by the way. So yeah, I'm just waiting to watch for it.
So Bernard might just pop the card.
Yeah.
Okay. Craig, have you seen any other apps for the Singtel event?
No, I haven't yet.
Okay.
I'll send you a link and you can tell us what you think.
That would be excellent. Thanks.
Yeah, maybe Craig, we can someday meet up for offline and have drinks together. Maybe we can get to meet you finally and have drinks.
Sounds like an excellent idea.
Yep.
Yes. Yeah, we do real life recording sometimes, but Craig, it's nice to actually get your insight, and it's been great actually to know the actual story behind Tencent and Sanook and all the at Leilong.com, which is actually one of the local Malaysian heroes anyway. So
yeah, that was great to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me.
No problem. We hope to get you on soon.
Excellent.
Okay.
Right, thank you.
So that's that for episode 65 of This Week in Asia. I think Smithy's kind of dropped off. So if you want to find him, you can find him on Twitter at Dreampipe. or you can find him on his blog at nokpis.com. Daniel, how do we find you?
Yeah, you can find me at cervantes.com, or next Saturday you can find me in JB. We are having Barcamp JB, of course. But also, courtesy of MSC Malaysia, we're going to open fast with some of our Muslim friends down south.
Break fast lah, open fast.
Buka puasa. Okay, break fast.
That's where breakfast came from. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, the Malaysian way anyway.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, and we can get Craig at MCWNEKS and Dr. Bernard.
You can find me at BernardLeong.com and most importantly, Chopbot. We just closed out our 0.75 million impressions and we'll be hitting our 1 million impressions, which I promise there's going to be a party called Chopbot. Okay?
I'll be there. So, just make sure you do it before I fly.
Yeah, there will be some good news coming for us and we are on a pretty good track now.
He's acting very coy. I'm going to have to pour him a very stiff drink and get it out of him.
Tell me later, Chulin, okay?
I'll tell you, don't worry.
Yeah.
Miss Chulin?
So you can find me at Chulink, Chewlink at Twitter. And every third Wednesday, you can find me at Blue Jazz at Bali Lane for Blink Blank. So I think that's that for This Week in Asia. You can find us on Twitter at This Week in Asia, or you can find us online. And if you're listening to it, to this recording, you already know where we are. But we really like mail, so please send us your feedback. Please tell us who you want us to talk to next, you know, and tell us how much you love us or not.
Right, goodbye.
Good night. Bye. You're unbelievable.